Hi there, this is Andrew from the Average Guy Podcast Network. The Average Guy Podcasts are brought to you uninterrupted and commercial free. If you'd like to help us keep it that way, please visit the donate/deals page over at the Average Guy TV and visit one of our sponsors.
This is the Home Tech Podcast Show number 40, recorded on August 18th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and posted each week on theaverageguy.tv. Here from the Average Guy Studios in Bellevue, Nebraska. Actually, a very thunderstormy, I don't know if that's the right word, but we have thunderstorms going on outside, and so hopefully we'll keep the power on. You can contact the show, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Find us on Facebook. Just search for the Average Guy Podcast, or you can follow me on Twitter @JCollison. Of course, we post the show notes to this show and all the other shows that we do over at theaverageguy.tv. All right. Well, it's been a couple weird weeks. Guys have been in and out and about, but everybody is back in town and back on the podcast. First, we have Andrew Morris. Andrew's in Melbourne, Australia, and a good friend of the show. Andrew, how are you?
Good, Jim.
Good
to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. We had you back last week, of course. You had been on vacation. We had a busy show last week. How was it getting back to work this week?
Nasty.
Never good to go back to work. I think I told you no good vacation goes unpunished.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. They've definitely been doing that. So
good. Good to have you back. It is really starting to thunderstorm outside. This is going to be fun. So, and back from a three-week, maybe four, it seems like. Christian, you've been gone a long time. Christian Johnson. Christian is all things over at bios-mods.com. And actually, Christian, that site's been kind of going crazy as of late. Is that right?
Like wildfire. We're about 20 away from hitting 3,000 unique IPs a day. So that's about 200,000 page views a month. And we're kicking up on Alexa site rankings, so that's really exciting. And we're averaging about 100 new users a day. So,
cool, yeah, busy stuff. If you want to check out what he's talking about, bios-mods.com, and that they help guys get more out of their PCs through the BIOS. So, tonight with us is a good friend from the homeservershow.com, and a guy who's been on the podcast before many times, Chris Lux. Chris, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, Jim. It's good to be here. I've actually been kind of running the podcast circuit the last week or so.
Yeah, you have. You were on JPEG to RAW with Mike.
Yep.
Last week and
a lot of fun.
Yeah,
actually,
got
that was
that
this
through.
Week, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that was. It seems like Tuesday. That was a long time ago.
Been a long week, I think, for all of us.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming in. I know. Are you guys still hearing me?
Yep.
Oh, that's good. Yep. Yeah, the power just went out briefly.
Oh, that was interesting.
Yeah. Oh, this could be an interesting podcast tonight as we got a pretty good sized thunderstorm rolling through. Hey, Christian, you were at NASA camp. Speaking of thunder and lightning and all things exploding, you were at NASA camp for the last couple weeks. Tell me how that went.
Yeah, it's a shame you guys didn't get to see me wear my "I Went Smart Kid Camp" T-shirt yesterday. But that was quite an experience, especially for high school students who are really looking to pursue math, science, or engineering courses. They did a lot of education stuff that you would never, ever, 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 ever see in a high school lecture. And we really learned a lot of cool stuff related to space, but also had a really good feel and opportunity to kind of explore all the different engineering fields. So, I mean, we're talking everything from chemical engineering to metallurgical engineering, and there was a lot of cool stuff involved with that. And we additionally, as strange as it seems, because South Dakota only has a population of about 500,000 people, we saw a lot of cool stuff. And the reason it was at South Dakota instead of a NASA center is because in order to have that collegiate experience, it was hosted at the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology, which was a really cool experience to be on campus. School of Mines and Technology. Okay. MINES, because mine engineering and mineral mineral digging is actually a huge field, and there's a lot in making sure that when that bomb blows up to get to the mine, it blows up just the way you want it. So,
yeah. Christian, how much hype did they put on the changing directions NASA's taking now that the shuttle program has been scrapped?
Yeah, we had an opportunity to have a video conference with Steve Chance, who's the executive director of the program that I'm in out of Kennedy Space Center, and he gave us some insider outlooks on what the budget's looking like for 2012. And last year they had $18.7 billion, which was their highest point that they had in terms of funding, and this year they're looking at a range from $16.9 billion to $19 billion. So they're not really sure where that's going to fall yet. What's interesting, though, is people don't realize that NASA's budget is only 0.5% of the total gross income that that the United States government makes. So for all the benefits that we're getting out of this program, it's barely costing us anything in compared to some of our Medicare, Medicaid, etc. So with the end of the shuttle program, they're looking a lot into unmanned spaceflight, and there's a lot of talk about some of the new Curiosity. The Mars Curiosity rover right now is pretty much what their focus is for the next month or so. But they're really getting into what they call third-party contracting. And they theorize that there's going to be a lot of relationships established with some of these commercial companies, in particular SpaceX, which is claiming to be the first company that's going to be ready for commercial flights into suborbital Earth flights, and they're the most promising privatized industry right now that that NASA sees is going to be successful. So,
suborbit for pleasure or suborbit for business and travel?
For both, actually. Obviously, it's going to be for the Donald Trumps of our world for a while because there's a cost involved, obviously. But they are looking at both a commercial aspect where anyone could buy a ticket and go suborbital. But a lot of what NASA is going to have to do now is they're going to start hiring companies like SpaceX to launch their rockets and do their missions for the next couple of months and years practically. But looking into the future, probably within the next 20 years or so, they're really going hard into re-researching the moon lunar habitat concept, and down the road, probably maybe 30 to 40 years, is the space elevator. There's a lot of theoretical research being done right now into the practicality of the space elevator and having mining done on the moon, as well as their original roadmap for Mars, the trip to Mars in 2020. But really what he said was it's not as much about looking at what the specific missions and directives are in the future. It's realizing that A, NASA's not falling out of the picture, but B, and part of that new picture means that companies like SpaceX and the private industry are really going to start playing a role. And one of their main concerns is finding a way to work with these industries to ensure that the U.S. is still one of the leading space industries.
Did you just say we're going to Mars in 9 years? How are we going to get to Mars in 9 years?
No, 2020 was the original roadmap set up before the end of the shuttle program. So,
who thinks we'll make it there? I say no chance. How about
no,
you guys?
No, there's the Orion project was supposed to be what got them close to that 2020 deadline.
Yeah.
And with Orion on the banks, I think there's going to be a shift where they're going to put the Mars stuff on hold, but they're definitely going to start pushing the moon and suborbital Earth projects, and they're definitely looking to private industry. SpaceX is putting out a lot of research, a lot of internships, just in general mass growth in that company. And I believe SpaceX is from the U.S. I, for some reason, I want to say that they have some relation to the European Space Agency, but they don't.
Were you at the camp when they found that new asteroid that's chasing us around the sun?
No, I was there when they had discovered when the satellite did the passover on Mars and saw what looked to be mud traveling down the one of the mountain ranges on Mars, which seemed to indicate that there's that there may have been water in that mud. Yeah. And I was also there during the Juno launch to send that satellite off to Jupiter. And we are also one of the presenters from NASA. We got a chance to talk to Tom Durkin. He's part of the South Dakota Space Consortium. Talked a lot of about Curiosity and a lot of the changes that rover has over Spirit and Opportunity, Opportunity being the one that's still in operation and has about 21 miles covered so far.
Sweet.
So that was very interesting.
Good stuff. Christian, what was probably the most interesting thing you learned?
Ooh, the most interesting thing I learned? No. We did a lot of study into the theories of quantum mechanics and propulsion and energy, which was really interesting because we don't get that in depth in a regular high school course. So that that was a lot of stuff that like I really just hadn't studied that was very interesting. Some of the real application stuff we did, we went out to the Black Hills Space Observatory with Ron Diving, who had built his own Newtonian telescope that's the largest in like three states, and it actually has remote web access where other astronomers and people can remote web access his telescope and actually use it and move the telescope, and it had a really cool dome and everything, and it was really cool to see some of the technology he had behind that, having actually everything from DOS powering some of the data to having his web access end where professors and graduate students could use his telescope. So that was some pretty neat in use technology happening.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I remember last year as I was kind of getting to know you last summer, you were just coming back from that.
Right.
Because you went last year too, right?
Yeah.
I didn't make that up, did I?
No. Last year was at Kennedy Space Center. Yeah. And it was a completely different program, but just as awesome.
Yeah. But did you do something else at that? It seems like I've heard you mention that school before there in South Dakota, or have you been on the slate to go to this camp for quite a while?
I've been on the acceptance list for the South Dakota program for maybe 4 or 5 months now. So,
all right. So maybe we've talked about it in the past.
Yeah, but hopefully looking forward to the internship opportunities after completing this camp junior and senior year. If I'm reaccepted back into the summer series programs, it would be full residential internships, probably at Goddard Space Flight Center.
Nice.
Where they pay you to be a research assistant in whatever field tickles your fancy. So,
well, Christian, when you talk about this, I all of a sudden feel really dumb.
Don't.
I've got you.
Please don't.
I've got Mr. or Dr. Lux there and Andrew, and I'm like, God, I'm dumb. Well, anyways, it's good to have you back. Your dad did a nice job filling in your absence, and he and I sat around for an hour and talked about subsonic, and he did a bang-up job. Hopefully you got a chance to listen to that.
Yeah, I heard that, and the I know I posted on our forum on Facebook the new I sent for all of our listeners. There's we created it on subsonic. Now you can share playlists where the people don't have to have a login to be able to see a certain playlist. So we shared a playlist that automatically pulls all the Home Tech podcasts, and you can listen
to
the share link. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't check that out yet. I'll have to go out and give that a peek.
Yeah, so that's pretty neat.
Well, good. Christian, welcome back. Good to have you back. I want to remind folks, again, if they want to contact the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. We also are changing our RSS feed. So if you subscribe to us through iTunes, or if you grab the RSS feed manually and threw it into something like Zoom Player or whatever, by September 30th, we'll be changing that feed. The easiest thing to do is just reestablish the feed. Everything is correct now on the website at theaverageguy.tv. You can grab those links, reestablish your feed, and you will get the uninterrupted flow of the Home Tech podcast into your living room or MP3 player of choice. So that is going on. Please do that. Otherwise, around September 30th, those will stop. We're switching over from Podomatic to IX web hosting full-time, and that gives us a little more flexibility and better bandwidth. So I appreciate your patience as we make the changeover. Speaking of making a changeover, let's jump right into the news. The favorite news topic of choice, at least for today. I thought we were going to spend most of the show talking about Google and Motorola, and that will come up here in just a second. But, of course, the big news is that HP announces today that, for all intents and purposes, they're going to scuttle the WebOS. It may get spun off onto something else, and, of course, HP is going to spin off all their PC units, whatever those are, the hardware and PC units. I'm sure there's billions of dollars worth of that. They're going to try and spin that off or sell that to another organization. Guys, some big news coming from HP. Of course, HP is the number one PC manufacturer in the world. Of course, those numbers vary from moment to moment, but they certainly sell more hardware than anybody. Big news. I think it's big news because I've been reviewing what's behind me here, the HP touchpad, and I've had some high hopes for that kind of device. And of course, with that comes the end, or at least is what I'm reading now, the end of the web OS. Andrew, a little dialogue with you, because I know you're not in that division or not close to that division, so I think you can talk about it some without breaking any NDAs of sort, but is that a surprise to you?
Yeah, look, the web OS one, given that it's only a recent acquisition, to me was quite surprising. I mean, I think everyone saw the news that Best Buy aren't terribly happy with the way the touchpad shipping this week. So, you know, to order, I think they ordered quarter of a million devices and then asked us to take back about 220,000 of them. So
yeah, sold about 25,000.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't think the device has had the uptake that they hoped it may have had. But the PC division was a total shock. I mean, we didn't have any inclination that was coming at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in the enterprise services business. I think looking at the media, it looks like they're going down the path of being a service software and cloud provider. So, you know, for me, being in the services business, it'll be interesting to see if we get impacted further down the path as well.
When you refer to HP services, what are services that HP provides?
So, enterprise services. So, for those of you in the States, the company formerly known as EDS. Is who I worked for, and then we got acquired by HP 2.5 years ago.
Is it EDS Home Security?
Electronic Data Systems.
Oh, okay. Oh, EDS, okay.
EDS, yes, yes. Sorry, it's okay. The accent.
Sorry.
So, look, you know, it'll be from my part, it'll be interesting to see what comes along. We don't see a lot of the impact on the market out here in Australia, because it's fairly small in comparison to other parts of the world like the US. So, yeah, look, it'll be interesting to see. You know, there's been some speculation. Michael Dell, I saw, had on Twitter, you know, what are they going to call the offshoot of the PC group? Are they going to call it Compaq?
So, reform the Compaq group and spin that off into its own. You know, and I can see why they would want to do that, of course, because the PC division, while it generates a ton of revenue, it does not generate a ton of profit. That market is very tight, and costs are low, but PC prices are even lower. And so when you look at the bottom line, it does not necessarily drive profit, and that's not good for Wall Street. There's a lot of pressure on the current CEO at HP to increase not just revenue, but overall profit and earnings.
Yeah. You think printers are in there too?
Printers are in a different group. Yeah. So they've got personal systems, which is phones, PCs, and then there's a printing group as well. So the printing group's totally separate.
Yeah, it is.
HP has a ton of intellectual property too, right? I mean, isn't that one of their biggest positives? Is just their mind share, like their number of patents, their number of people working on experimental technologies, things like that. Or is that in the past?
I'd have to say I believe you, because I really don't know.
Okay.
You know, being in the outsourcing, we just don't have that exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're in Australia, and a lot of this, a lot of the action is going on here in the United States with corporate headquarters. You know, I was born in San Jose, and I grew up not far from corporate headquarters there in Santa Clara. And I remember in the 70s that, you know, HP was a little you know, a little printer company, and they made some little calculators, and they had some, yeah. I mean, they had some server-grade equipment and some other stuff going on at the time, but certainly not the behemoth. They were not the behemoth company. They were big, but they're nothing like they are today. PC Mag says this: last month, HP said it planned to take the web OS global by naming Steve DeWitt, the head of HP's PC business in the Americas, to lead the web OS business. Of course, John Rubinstein, who led HP or led Palm with the web OS at one point in time, the man who led the web OS, was also shifted to senior vice president for product innovation within HP's Personal Systems Group, or the PSG, which oversees its PCs. In June, HP also underwent a shakeup in its enterprise spacing, paring down some of its top management. So there's certainly some changes going on at HP. Specifically, though, as this relates down to the handsets, you know, my hope had been that HP would be able to revitalize the web OS. As I've been doing the review on this tablet, it's been nice to get back to the web OS. It suffers from some of the problems that it suffered with at launch. It's a little draggy in some spots. It's a little, you know, it hesitates in some others. It's not the fastest thing. Beautiful UI. I love the card, the way it does cards, and the way the web OS interacts in a multitasking environment. But I am a little disappointed. I think, I don't know, I think it's done. I don't see much hope. I mean, they could spin that off to somebody else, but my God, if HP can't make it work, who could at this point?
Yeah, what's the disappointing piece for you, Jim? Is it web OS, or is it the hardware, or is it the build? Is it?
No, it's web OS. I kind of had high hopes, and maybe it's just my anti-Apple hope that, and I have an Android phone, so I'm not, you know, competition's good. I like the web OS. I loved the Palm Pre in concept. It didn't really pan out to be a great phone because the hardware was really bad. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's kind of sad to see this. I've had a Palm back to the Palm 3 days. I think that's what it was. It was a Palm 3, the old.
I had a Palm Tungsten.
Yeah.
Palm.
Yeah. I bought a Tungsten, I think, for my wife after, you know, I had some of the original Palm equipment. And, you know, certainly they dominated the PDA market for a long, long time. And I guess, I don't know. Little nostalgic. That's a great question, though, Andrew. I guess I'll ask you guys this. Will the tablet world be any worse when the web OS disappears?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, iPad's got such a corner on the market. That I think what HP were hoping to do is that they were going to be the real number two competitor to iPad. Given the fragmentation in the Android tablet market, Windows tablet platform just hasn't got there yet.
Well, Windows 8 is supposed to do that, right? That's the whole idea with their new stylized version of Windows 8, that it should run on tablets well.
Yeah, the new moving the Metro GUI into the tablet. Yeah,
I can see it.
Look, we've seen some of the alpha builds of Windows 8 running on that type of hardware, but you know it's still pretty primitive. It doesn't that doesn't have the ability, I don't think, to be that true competitor yet.
In fairness, the operating system doesn't exist yet. I mean, there's still a raw version of it.
But Chris, aren't they? I mean, isn't it too late? I mean, I can't. It's too late to build a tablet or a phone OS from scratch. I mean,
you'd have to think so.
You own a Windows phone, and so I'm poking the bear.
Last night I was out with some friends, and some people got their new Android phones out, and they're like, "Hey, Chris, look at this new phone. Look how cool this is." And I was flipping through it, and I was like, "Gosh, this feels so chunky. This feels so it didn't have the same smoothness than I'd gotten used to with the Windows phone." And I told you before, I was really nervous about having withdrawal from my iPhone when I left that. And I've never looked back. I don't even touch the thing. It sits on my shelf, and I haven't gotten it out in a long time. And a lot of the people I was talking to last night were saying, you know, yeah, we were going to get a Windows phone, but we're on Verizon, or we were going to get a Windows phone, but I've already bought so many apps. So yes, there are reasons why people are having a hard time getting into it. But I think it's starting to get attention. I think people are starting to look at it as a viable option. the other piece, you know, this week there was, and I know we're going to get to this a little bit later. I just got waved at. What's going on?
No, it's just Christian adjusting his camera.
I thought I was being waved off. So one of the big announcements when Google bought Motorola is the backlash from the other OEMs, and it's Samsung and the company saying, well, wait a minute, now we're going to be second-class citizens to Google, who's going to be tweaking their operating system for Motorola and those devices because they have a vested interest. They have a conflict of interest there. And suddenly these companies are like, well, where do we go next? Hey, why don't we go to Microsoft, who's going to pay us a sum of money in order to make their phones with our operating system on it? And now you're suddenly going to see a lot more phones coming out in that market. So I think Google just gave a nice present to Microsoft, but I'm not sure about that.
All right, so let me make sure I follow you. What you're saying is because Google now is going to align itself with Motorola or Motorola hardware. Well, yeah. It's going to, right? You're saying right. That's going to dominate, you think. And then so the other handset manufacturers are going to say, well, we're going to move over to Windows as the default
they won't make hardware. Right. And because
even though they have an alliance with Nokia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they don't own Nokia. They don't own Nokia. They just said, we're going to give you insider access. You know, if Samsung comes along, if HTC comes along and says, hey, listen, we want that same access. We want to get the same deals. We want to have the same, you know, testing of our phones within your system. And we don't want to pay any more than we were paying with Android, or we want to pay less than we were paying with Android. Now you've got a situation where manufacturers can start flooding into that ecosystem. They can't do it with Apple, right? Because they're not going to be able to put the iOS on their devices, and they want to make their hardware. And now it's, while they've done it with Google for a long time, Google may have just angered those manufacturers.
Although it is interesting because you mentioned Samsung before, because Samsung this week picked up the guy who's behind the Cyanogen mod ROMs, the aftermarket ones. So he's, you know, that's one of the most popular non-OEM ROM that's available on the Android platform at the moment. So they've just hired, you know, a real class developer in that platform, which I think is going to be kind of interesting as well.
Chris, I'm not sure. So as we talk about, okay, they've purchased Motorola. Do you? I guess I'm still not convinced that they're going to abandon all the other platforms.
Not abandon. But if you've got people working on code and they're working on getting the latest phones tested and they're working on getting the newest you know, front-facing cameras, different voice commands, things like that, they're going to have their own stuff in-house to be working on and testing first. Yeah. And that has the potential to give them – I mean, it doesn't give them insider status. It makes them part of the company.
Yeah.
That's the difference. If they had said, we're going to pay a certain amount to have exclusive rights to develop new products with Motorola – yeah, they'd probably be fine. But when they say, we own the company, we own the division that's making these phones, now it's their operating system on their phone and their operating system on other companies' phones. And those other companies are potentially going to be slighted by that.
Well, except Google's vision is to have Android on everything all the time. So don't you think they would still work just as hard to make sure Samsung and the other manufacturers out there, HTC.
Right. And just, you know, I'm not the only one saying this. The headlines on Gizmodo and people are saying that Samsung, apparently there was some tweets coming out of Samsung headquarters basically saying, what is this? What is happening here? We're not so thrilled. So.
Yeah. No, I don't. I mean, I'm not trying to argue with you. I am. I mean, that's what makes a good show.
I guess my question is, where does the level of compatibility come in? Because, I mean, we saw with Winmo 6.5 how developers had a really hard time with compatibility and certain manufacturers had a hard time adopting the new OS. Windows Phone 7 was a bit more successful, but if you're going to have all these new companies who want to start using Windows Phone, they're going to probably have to change their game plan a bit.
Yeah, and that's true. You know, there are hardware requirements that they have. There's apparently a new lower spec version of Windows Phone they're working on. I think it's called Tango. So you have Mango and Tango.
Yep.
they're working on a slightly lower spec version. So the idea there is that you can get phones that have a lot of the functionality but may not be full smartphones from that standpoint. And you can start cornering the market of people who don't really want a full-featured smartphone but want some of the niceties that you get on a phone like that. So I think they're making a lot of smart moves. Are they going to be able to like overcome Google or Apple anytime soon? Absolutely not. But I think there have been some nice things where the stars are aligning for them in interesting ways. So we'll see what happens.
So does this mean I can sync my Mango and my Tango with my Dodge Durango?
Oh boy!
No, it has to be Ford Sync.
That was bad, Christian. It was a good try, though. It was a gallant effort. So, Chris, your next phone is what at this point? Are you going to stay knowing what you know now about Windows Phone? Are you going to continue to stay in that ecosystem?
Absolutely, for the time being. Okay. I really don't see leaving it. It ties together too much of what I do. I use some of the Windows Live products. I use OneNote. I use the Zune ecosystem.
Are you on 6.5 or 7?
I have not hacked it to put the new operating system on. I have not put Mango on yet. So, are you asking if I'm on Windows Phone 7 or on the old?
Yeah,
Windows Phone 7. So it's the new one.
Yeah, he's on the
Mango is still on its way out soon. And just from what they've showed, it basically fixes a lot of the little things that have been quote-unquote wrong with the Windows Phone. But my experience is that those little things are not that big a deal. And while it'll be nice to have it upgraded, it is really a much – and I'm not just saying this because it's the phone I have. Like, I would – if I didn't like it, I would honestly take the SIM card out and put it back in my 3GS iPhone and start using that. But I wouldn't dream of doing that. There's so much that I like about using this that I'm sticking with it. So, and I'm going to stop before I turn into a commercial.
And which phone is this, Windows 7?
It's the AT&T. It's the HTC HD 7S.
Okay.
So, and one of the things that drew it to me in the first place, which is kind of silly, but I just like that the entire front of it is basically a screen, and compared to the iPhone, it's massive. It's got so much more screen real estate, and it just has it's nicer looking. I don't know. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Similar to the Evo 3D, though. Sure. In terms of screen real estate, at least.
Yeah.
I would have to agree with him that. I think my father mentioned this on a couple podcasts ago, how the with the Androids, the HTC Sync that works with Outlook to sync all your contacts and your data has been crashing Outlook, and they still haven't got a fix for that. So every time you sync up your phone or your Outlook, it crashes your profile, and you have to find a way to recover your profile. And like my Windows mobile phone does a great job of syncing with Outlook and our SharePoint. Then Outlook sees it, and then my phone goes, oh, now I know I need to put it on, and it just does it.
And so, this may just be a fluke, but I've had two friends this week with Android phones. One of them, randomly about every 15 minutes during the day, it starts playing a random music file from their collection on the speakers, and so they have to shut their phone off when they're not making a phone call. And the other person, their phone just continually turns on. So they'll go into their purse and take it out, and the phone's on, and the battery's dying on it. So, you know, they're running into the Microsoft problem. They have so many different phones on so many different versions of the operating system. All it takes is one rogue app getting on people's phones, and now it starts screwing up. And it's just a hard ecosystem to work in. And as much as I don't like things that are super locked down, like the Windows Phone 7 thing is, it runs and it's smooth and it doesn't have those same issues. So
with all these advanced phones you guys have, here's a random oddball question for you. So my phone I use as an alarm clock, right? So
yeah,
I'll set my alarm clock, let's say 10, right? And I have to turn the volume on, obviously, if I'm going to be able to hear it to wake up to it, right? So
yeah.
I'm sitting here wondering, and I still haven't found an option on my phone, so I'm wondering if you guys have it, is how can I set it up so that only the alarm can wake me up and not someone calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning?
I think the alarm will still go off even if your phone's in silent mode.
Oh, interesting. Mine doesn't. If I put it in silent, everything's silent.
And yeah, then that's not good.
There's an app for that for Android.
Yeah, I have a Samsung Epic, and that it works just fine when the speaker's off and the alarm clock works. So
one of the things I like about the new alarm clock on the Windows Phone is that it starts out really quiet, and then it gets louder and louder. You know, you have to shut it off. This is a totally random off-topic story, but I heard there's a fun alarm clock app. I think it's for the iPhone. It might be for Android as well. But you link it to your favorite charity, and every time you hit the snooze button, it gives a designated amount of money to that charity. So you can hit the snooze button.
Broke.
But it's going to cost you. Well, that's the thing. So if you really want to wake up at a certain time, you maybe set the amount higher. And you're like, all right, I got to get up for work, and it's worth $10 to me. So if you wake up and you're like, oh, I want to snooze. Oh, I can't. It's going to cost me $10. But then if you do hit snooze, now you fed a child that's dying in Africa. So
that's a bit two-faced.
I don't know. I thought that was kind of a strange feature.
A little motivation to get out of bed, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
or to feed a child. I mean,
honey, why did you miss work today? Oh, I was saving the children in Africa. So,
well, before we move on, to kind of come back to, you know, we talked through the Motorola acquisition, but to come back around to the WebOS, the touchpad, real quick. Yeah. One of the things I did want to say is I think I'm going to keep my eyes open for some fire sale deals on it, and you know if on how to do it. I couldn't remember how to do it.
It's a good thing we talked about it.
It's a good thing I wrote it down because I couldn't remember how to recover.
Quote Jim Collison, I started this podcast. If someone asked me a dumb question, I could just tell them to listen to the podcast and it would tell them how to do it.
Right. That's the only reason I post things is so I can go back and find them myself. So, let's see. Christian, your audio is a little rough. I can't see you, Chris, so start and stop your video for me.
I can see Chris. Chris doing it. I can see 2 out of 3. I see 1 out of 3.
Your audio is breaking up for me, Christian.
Is it bad?
Is it the same for you guys?
Yeah. It's a little poppy, yeah.
A little bit choppy. Yeah.
I'm going to move around a bit, see if we get any luck here.
Okay, that's fine.
You tilt your head on one side and stand on two legs.
Well, so let me...
Then move to the other side of the
room. Yeah. Let me tell you what happens.
All right, how about now?
Oh. Keep talking.
Tilt your head back.
1, 2, 3, 4. Five, yeah, that's better. 6, 7.
That's better.
8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Stay right there. You're good. Can you hear us?
This is like listening to Sesame Street.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
That's one.
Oh boy, that's scary.
So, did you copy those 10 files at least?
I haven't copied them yet. I'll go back and get them when I don't think it's going to overwrite.
You might want to do that. Well, it might if you start new, wouldn't it? Might clear your 10 file.
Well, it's too late if it did because I already started the recording. Don't. Yeah, so let's just keep going. I'm not too worried about it.
Is our stream still with us? Or people?
The stream, yeah. Let's see. Where's the? I don't have a chat window up. I assume.
Yeah, the stream is working. Yep. The stream is working. My video won't work, so I'm just going to go to a picture.
Yeah.
But the audio seems to be coming through, so I think we're good to go.
I think so. So what happened? Right in the middle, I was saying something. Can't even remember what it was. The lightning struck. It hit close. It was loud.
It hit really close.
Everything went down, and of course, I think what happened was it overwhelmed the UPS that I have, and that blew because I shut that off and turned it back. I had to reset it, and it tripped. It tripped the UPS out in front that has the media center, and tripped the power. We have a surge protector on the kids' equipment. It tripped that one as well. And it also tripped my GFCI back that we use to feed some power up and over into the entertainment center to get some extra juice over there. And it tripped the GFCI. So we got a little power surge that went through the house. I'm feeling very fortunate that I didn't lose any equipment in the process. It could have fried a handful of things. Everything came back and we're good to go. So ironically, so I'm sitting in the dark And I'm thinking, huh, well, this kind of sucks. And I hear ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-ding-ding, which is the touchpad. And I'm like, oh, that's the touchpad. So I hit the thing, and it's I say hello, and it's Chris Lux. And he's like, hey, you okay?
I'm everywhere.
And I'm like, maybe we could just do the podcast from the touchpad, but you couldn't bring in – it wouldn't allow you to bring in Andrew or Christian.
And trying to do video and record and all that was going to be a mess. So.
No, I just thought it would have been fun to try and get the two other guys on there so we could talk this through. So a couple lessons learned in this. One is I think the UPS that I use for my main and for the broadcast server, it also has the Windows Home server on it. That's three is probably too many PCs to have on that little. It's just a little tiny UPS, mm-hmm. not very big. So I think I'm going to need to upgrade that sometime soon. And so lesson learned. Second lesson learned, don't start Audacity until you've backed up the temp files. Now, I don't know if they're gone for sure, so we'll find out. I'm not too worried about it.
You can always pull it out of live stream anyway, can't you?
Yes. Yes, I think.
Ooh, that was a very...
yes, taking it to the cloud.
Yeah, that could be interesting. That could be... Because, yeah, it went well... I'll figure it out one way or another, Andrew.
Yeah.
Andrew, kill your video for me. I'm going to kill mine, and we'll just go to we'll finish this podcast up. Just pictures. So sorry, Ustream. We're struggling with some bandwidth issues, and we're just going to use the pictures. So, all right, an eventful evening, guys. Let's wrap up. The one thing I was saying, I do remember what I was saying just before the power went out. So let's not. Hopefully, we won't tempt the touchpad gods again. If touchpads go on sale and I can get one for $100 or $150, I'll probably pull the trigger. It's a good enough machine to run every day as a touchpad. I don't necessarily have to. I guess one of the things I've learned is I don't have to have the Apple ecosystem to make that thing work like I wanted to. It runs Skype. Obviously, we just did a Skype call, Chris, between you and I, and made that work. I don't need – one of my thoughts was, they don't have a Runkeeper app or they don't have a Mint.com app. And then I'm like, hey, dummy, you're not going to run with the thing.
Yeah, right? I don't have Mint on mine, but yeah.
You can get Runkeeper on the iPad though, right?
Yeah, but
I'm not going to run with it.
I'm not going to run with it. And two, if I could just go to the web page. I mean, that's the same thing with Mint.com. I have an Android app for Mint.com, and you would need it, you know, for a phone. But,
Jim, you got to think they're going to let you keep that trial unit, right? If they're going to shut down.
I hope so, but
just don't say anything about it.
The guy that gave it to me is a good friend, so I'm sure he's going to say something at this point.
Say, it's discontinued. I get it now.
I'm going to send him a note tomorrow and say, "Hey, now that you know," and see what he says. But if I have to buy one, if they go down that price and I am buying one, I think, you know, $99 or $149 or $199 is probably a good price point considering that they're going to stop supporting them and the ecosystem won't be there anymore. It could be a good touchpad for the next 2 years. It has everything I need right now. Maybe not exactly everything, but I even found the Wi-Fi over the week, having it the first week. It confirmed my suspicion that for me, Wi-Fi is enough because 90% of the time, I'm someplace that has a good Wi-Fi connection. You know,
yep. even if that is coming from your cell phone with a mobile hotspot, right?
Sure, I could do it that way too. I haven't. But if I'm going to use the only thing I'd use the touchpad for that I would need mobile is if I wanted to use it for GPS and mapping, right? But I'll be honest, I'm going to use my phone for that. So
right, yeah.
It does work for me 99% of the time without problems, and because the browser is so good in it, I don't need all those mobile apps that I've need to use, because I can just go right to the website and get them. LinkedIn would be that way, although there's a LinkedIn app, you know, LinkedIn and email, I can get all that stuff. I could go through the web if I wanted to. So that'll be my final thought. I'll write that I'm going to write up a final blog post that, says, RIP WebOS or something like that.
And I don't, again, I don't know if it's going to necessarily, we, like everybody else, have maybe jumped to the conclusion that it's going to die. It could be rebranded somewhere or go somewhere else and be revitalized. I guess I wouldn't necessarily cry if it went away permanently. It's not that big of a deal, but it is a cool little OS.
Okay. Would you replace it down the path with something else? I know you asked us before.
Would I replace the touchpad?
Yeah, would you buy a tablet of some variant?
Yeah, I'd buy it. Well, I wouldn't buy an Android tablet right now. If I was gonna buy a tablet, I'd buy the iPad, to be blunt. If money was no option, and I was buying one, the touchpad by far is far and away the best one I think going on out there. Android's still a little shaky. If the price was an option and I was going for low price and I had $200, I'd pay $200 for this one.
Yep, okay.
Just a thought. So, okay, let me bring that browser. Chris, you had a quick and let's make it a 10-minute discussion on
At most. Yeah. The AT&T thing.
Yeah,
So AT&T made an announcement this week where they are going to be getting rid of a number of their texting plans for sending SMS text messages. And so you either have to get a $20 a month unlimited text message plan, or you have to pay per message, and that costs 20 cents per message. Okay? So my question to you guys is, how much should a single SMS message cost to send on a phone network?
You know, as much as my kids and wife text, I'd pay the $20.
Okay, but I guess what I'm asking is, what a text message is data.
Right?
It's a small little bit of data.
Right.
And a lot of us have smartphones, and those smartphones have a data plan, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at an article on Gizmodo.com written by – boy, I can't really – oh, here we go. Sam Biddle. And his comment – he did the math here. So he said, if you look at the average cost of a data plan from AT&T and you look at how much data the average text message contains, then the cost to send that data in a text message is actually .0002 cents per text message. So they are charging you 100,000 times the data rate that they do to download a YouTube video or download a website using your data plan. They're charging you 100,000 times the data rate to use your text messages, which is pretty freaking ridiculous. Now, yeah. AT&T is not the only evil one here, because all of the companies charge about the same style premium of close to 20 cents per text message unless you pay for one of their plans. And it's just showing how exorbitant that number is. And I think before long, they're going to have to either cut this price down, or people are going to start finding ways around text messaging and just give up on it, because that expense is getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's all I had to say. I'm okay. Off my soapbox. So.
Well, you know, Chris, it's a good point, though, that from a you know, just nickel and diming the consumer.
Right.
It's not
a real product. It's
right.
Not, you know, some products are real, and data, yes, you can say there's premium data and not premium data. Text messaging in no way is a premium data service. It is a very basic messaging service, and they are relying on convincing us that it's somehow a premium set of data that they're willing to charge us 100,000 times the normal data rate.
Right.
And hopefully we'll get the word out and people will get upset about it. So.
Yeah,
well, I get. There's always alternative solutions too, because there's things like Kik Messenger, which is KIK,
right?
Where it uses the that uses the data network to send what looks like a text message,
right. But can you receive on that? Like, can you receive?
You know, and that uses your data plan. You don't get charged at all. I mean, you know, if Jim and you were running it on your respective phones, then you know we'll.
Yeah, but you know, that comes down to the point where, yeah, if you're tech savvy enough to be able to find that program, and you've got the phone that can handle that program and your friends are in the ecosystem, then you can avoid being screwed by the phone company. Otherwise, you got to pay that huge fee. So I think it's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, speaking of ridiculous, the Skype connection tonight is ridiculous now.
Oh, it's sounding bad
we just lost Andrew temporarily, so
he'll come back, Andrew.
In a second. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, Chris, I'm to the point. Oh, now he's trying to call me. Can you hear him?
Yeah.
He's called here. We'll bring him. Let's bring him in on the conversation here. 1 second. Andrew, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, reconnected.
No, he's coming through this.
Oh.
He's coming through this one. I thought I was going to get him for sure on the touchpad, but.
Yeah.
So you're there? When you tried to call me back, the touchpad rang.
Ah.
Yeah, that's cool. Well,
so anyway.
If there's, yeah, Chris, I'm with you. I think, you know, the text needs to be treated just like utility. It's just part of, right? I mean, it's just kind of part of the service plan and should not be an additional charge for usage, especially as expensive as you're explaining it, especially as expensive as it sounds. I mean, that's like pure profit.
Yeah, I mean, data has become really the one that should be charged for. But I mean, what SMS 160 carriers? I mean, 160 characters is not like it's a big deal for cell network or traffic.
It's a very small packet.
Not anymore, right?
It's a huge small packet. It's maybe like 1 kilobyte at most.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good stuff. Christian, I know you got some stuff for Christian's Corner, so why don't we just launch right into that and you roll through it?
Sure. So I'll keep it short and sweet. My highlight for the deal of the week is by far the Seagate Momentus XT drive. I had it kind of sitting around because we were going to put it in the new Asus tablet that we had, the 10-inch tablet. And turns out I was having some real weird slowdowns on my netbook. And I could tell it was just because my cache had become so large on this OS and with all my stuff on it that I was just getting a lot of hard drive access time. So for $100, you can get the 500 gigabyte 7200 RPM model with a 32 megabit cache, and it has 4 gigabytes of hybrid SSD, which means it'll take the most commonly used files that the hard drive sees going on and off its platter, and it will move the most used files to the solid state disk to get additional performance. And I'm getting about maybe 110 megabytes per second read write on average, which is exceptional, especially because the original drive in here was a Seagate Momentus 5400 RPM that came with this netbook, and the difference is just incredible. And I don't think it's because of the difference between 5400 and 72 as much as having that solid-state disk in operation. But, I mean, just after cloning the disk to the new hard drive and booting it back up, I mean, day-to-day stuff has been so much faster, and it's
Christian,
a deal for $100.
Like, do you feel like there's been firmware updates or something to the Momentus line? Because that I remember when that first came out thinking that sounded like it had a lot of promise, and it was kind of getting universally panned in the reviews. Do you feel like you're using a newer iteration of that product?
I don't know if I think the Momentus one you're thinking of was actually the desktop ones.
Yeah.
The full ones. This is right. The 2.5 inch. So I think the 2.5 inch would have been a different firmware because it's a hybrid drive and not the regular spinning platter. But
the spinning platter ones were hybrids as well.
Okay. Yeah. That's one I'd have to check out because okay. I've had absolutely no problems with this one. So I'd have to check what firmware I'm on, but it's just been great, and I've been able to get actually so much more done on here. And it's it's like, why would I spend? Because I was kind of torn between why don't I just buy a 64 gigabyte SSD and then it'll be pure SSD and it'll be even quicker. But I'm getting 500 gigabytes, and it's relatively a very quick drive. So I've, for between the storage aspect and the fact that I'm getting like 110 megabytes per second, day-to-day stuff is a lot easier now for a $99 upgrade.
How do you, I've heard mixed reports about them. Like some of the folk, I think, Mike Fauchet was saying in one of the forums on the home server show forums that there've been mixed reports about the SSD cache on them interfering with data data transfer, I think it was. Have you seen anything like that?
No, I've had really good copy time, and actually the way these come is that normally it's like a 160 gig drive that's on the original netbook, and it's partitioned 1770, so yeah. 140 actually. So when you clone this, I used a Western Digital tool, surprisingly enough, for Seagate drive. Anyway, I used the Western Digital stuff to clone it to the new drive, and it recreates the new partitions at an equal percentage. So instead of 70 and 70, it was now 250 and 250. And I have had to do some copying of like photos and stuff because I was cleaning up the drive and moving some stuff around, and I haven't seen any issues. And what people I think sometimes get the impression is that like this 4 gigabyte drive magically shows up in your my computer and you just put stuff on there, but no, it doesn't even show up.
It's hidden in the firmware. It just runs off the drive itself. I think very cool concept. I'm glad to hear that it's working in the wild.
I've been very pleased with it. It was just kind of one of those things where I said, I'll stick it in there and see if it helps, and it made all the difference.
Yeah, and most of the active parts of Windows 7 or whatever operating system you're running can live on that flash part.
Right.
You load in a couple, 2-3 programs, and still everything's running as an SSD. It's just going back to get the data once in a while. I think that's neat.
So it was a pretty awesome deal. And then from last show 37, which had some technical difficulties beyond repair, the Linksys E4200 maximum performance router I put in there, seeing as how Jim's router had the kill switch during that podcast. So
yeah, well, it was more like Jim was being an idiot. So yeah,
we and it looks like Chris got it for $80 refurb. How's that been for you, Chris?
Great. You know, I basically took out my old router, put the new one in, called it the same thing, and haven't messed with it. It just went in seamlessly. I really haven't played with any of the features in there. I haven't put any since I just reinstalled my OS, I haven't even put the Logitech connector software in there, and it just works. It's great.
Yeah, so and again, that's dual band, right? So are you getting the full 600
simultaneous dual band? I haven't tested it, but it seems really fast. And one of the main reasons I got it was to interface with the wireless N in the Xbox Slim, and that works fantastic. I get a little bit stabler Netflix streaming than I had before.
Right. Now I find that interesting because like my netbook will not, even though it's a wireless N card, the netbook doesn't do faster than I think 135, even though it's a wireless N card. And even like with the, if you get a full desktop wireless N card, I know it's very hard to actually hit that true 300. I've had it tuned at 270 very well with some of the higher end desktop cards, but getting that exact 300 can be very difficult. So
yeah.
We have one of the newer Netgear dual band ends, and that has been exceptional as well. And I haven't tested dual band on that, but
and this thing's kind of cool looking too. It looks kind of like a spaceship.
Yeah, that was kind of neat. So, and then some other cool things. I just wanted to get a poll. It looks like Chris has answered to hearing and using GIMP, but it's interesting because I get some people who I would expect to have used or seen GIMP before, who have no idea what it is and think that you have to pay for Photoshop. And then I get some people out of the blue who are like, oh, yeah, I use GIMP. So I just thought we'd kind of mention it quickly because it's been a great Photoshop application for myself doing website design and logos for people. And I've had a great positive experience with it, and it just works every time. So I was just wondering if anyone had any experience with that.
I have in the past. I use Photoshop a little bit now. I don't tend to do as much editing as I used to. I tend to leave my images pretty much within Lightroom for the most part now. But I've also dabbled with Paint.net,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty powerful as well, and same price as the GIMP. So,
right, yeah. And then
I've used GIMP in the past, but it's I have a copy of Photoshop, and so I just can't tend to stay in there.
Okay. Yeah, so I know they were working towards version 2.8, which I think was supposed to be their newer graphical interface, and I'm still on 2.6, and it just works every time. And it's like, I can export it to Photoshop or any file format, and it's cool stuff. So that was pretty neat. And finally, for the speed tip of the week, I wanted to retouch back on TerraCopy because I don't think we've mentioned it on the Home Tech podcast. And I've heard a lot of people go, oh, you got to try TerraCopy. And I had never tried it before. So I installed it on my desktop, and I've had so far, I've had a pretty positive experience between like one of the really annoying things that used to always bother me was when I would make a copy of an original file and paste it to the same directory when I was doing either like hex editing or editing a photo, and I wanted to make sure I had an original in case the one I was editing had issues with it. And I used to always have to keep doing the would you like to rename it to this file name with parentheses 2 and yes or no and confirm and all that. And TerraCopy just does it automatically, and it's really cool because I thought TerraCopy, like, you had to set up the file operation, but actually it kind of takes over the Windows Explorer copying mechanism, so every time you try and copy something, it just automatically takes over and does the copy for it. And I've had a little bit better copy speeds, which is what the big attraction to it is, but it just seems more efficient. So like when I try and copy that duplicate, it just automatically renames it with an underscore 2 or underscore 3 instead of asking me, which I think is a smart thing to do. But overall, that's been another very positive program I've had on Windows 7 and enjoy it very much.
You know, it's good good advice, Christian. I've been doing a lot of with both the Drobo and the RAID that I've put in my box. I've been doing a lot of file transfer, and I've been using Windows file transfer, even though I say never use that.
Right.
And mostly because it's for files I don't really care about. I'm just trying to create data sets.
Uh-huh.
And so I've kind of been ignoring my own advice from that perspective. But, you know, we've always said if you're going to move data from one place to another and you want to make sure it all gets there, don't use Windows.
Right.
No,
Yeah. And I hadn't really taken that advice seriously before. I figured, you know what, come on, this has to be Windows operating system. You know, copy has been around since DOS, so they got to get their act together. But
and they've never gotten it right.
No.
Yeah, I've had better experience with TerraCopy.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what's interesting is that when you talk, Chris's icon is the one that shows up. It's all a mess on Skype at the moment. That's hilarious.
Maybe it's like that movie where the two guys peed in the fountain and changed lives, like when lightning struck. Christian and I changed lives, so now I have to go to school tomorrow and he has to go to the hospital.
I think you guys could probably handle it either way, I'm thinking.
Who would watch that movie?
Yeah. That's great. Christian, anything else on that?
I'm going to save the interesting speed tip of the week for next week because I want to get more in depth with that. So
perfect.
I think that's a wrap from the desk of Christian.
All right, good stuff. Guys, anything else as we get close to just wrapping this thing up? I did find the temporary files as you guys were talking. So
the show
will
go on.
I think the audio is all there. Yeah, you know, I'm not too worried about it. If we miss audio, we miss audio. But
so we're not publishing video to live stream then, just the audio.
The video is not very good.
Yeah.
At this point, we still haven't. You know, I mentioned earlier the Spartan Radio podcast that I do, and that one I've been getting spectacular video for every single time. Mm-hmm. But between the Home Server Show and the Home Tech podcast, I've just not been able to get a solid video show that works. And I think some of it is just bandwidth and trying to make it all work. So it's still, and I'm not super impressed with this Skype 5.5 upgrade either. It seems to have added a few little challenges to it. So, yeah, anyways. All right, gentlemen, I appreciate you living through the disaster that has been lightning striking close by tonight and blown fuses and UPSs that have at least, I think, protected my home equipment from taking any damage. We were able to get the show back, so I appreciate you guys coming on tonight and making it work. Andrew, thanks for taking your lunchtime to be part of it tonight. I appreciate it. And Christian, it's good to have you back from NASA camp. And,
thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
When's school start for you?
September 8th, so I got a bit yet. But it feels like I'm in just the workplace because I've been picking up about 2 clients a week. So I've been publishing about 2 new websites a week at the rate I'm going. Yeah. So
I need to talk to you about moving another site onto IX web hosting. So
Jim likes the IX. He's ready.
I like the Christian version of IX web hosting.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's what I like.
The Christian enhanced version.
Uh-huh, see, the Christian sped up version.
I should get paid for all the referrals I've given those people. They need to get a referral program going.
they definitely do. It needs to become a tier layer where you make a little bit of money. So
yeah.
good stuff. And Chris, thanks for jumping in tonight, and your podcasting week is now officially over.
Awesome. You know, it's been so much fun, and I always like doing this, so thanks for having me back on.
You bet. It's good to have you. I'll remind folks, if they do want to contact the show, and I've been getting some more emails, send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We are making a run at getting the Facebook site, the Facebook group, I should say, up and running and working. And more guys, Jay, thanks for your comments out there.
Yeah, Jay's been awesome, guys.
Yeah, he has been out there. And so if you just go out to Facebook and search for The Average Guy Podcast, we've created a little site out there. I'll just do it real quick here. It actually comes right up for me. We've been trying to create some kind of forums out there. And so without doing forum software on the site, I post all the podcasts as well as any topics that come up. And a couple guys, Tim Black has jumped out there. And Jeff, I think, has been also, I'm trying to find Jeff's post, Greenaway, has been out there. John Greenaway has been out there posting as well. If you want to join us, just jump on there. You don't have to really do anything. You can just jump in and make a comment on any of the posts that we do. Of course, Andrew always does a bang-up job on the show notes, and tonight that'll be a little bit of a challenge for you, Andrew. I'll have to piece together all the audio and send it over to you. I'm going to get that done tonight. I'm in Kansas City tomorrow. And
coming to Missouri, huh?
Yeah, coming down. We've got to make the detour around all the flood. All the flooding that's going on I-29.
Yeah.
But
we'll swing on by St. Louis. We'll have lunch.
Yeah, it's a little out of the way, Chris.
Now he's switched place with Andrew. Now when Chris talks, Andrew shows up.
That is
We better stop.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
The Skype gods are not with us tonight. We should quit while we're ahead.
That's it. All right. Guys, we're back next Thursday, and we're on here 7 o'clock Central. And guys, thanks for coming out tonight. Everybody have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Have a good one, folks.
And post it each week to theaverageguy.tv. Let me start over. That didn't work.
Live
on live stream. We are live on live stream.
You found the average guy.
Good. Christian's ready. So let's just bring him in.
Is Christian live now?
Quit mocking me, Andrew.
Okay.
No, just kidding. You can mock me if you want.
I'll talk to my mute button.